Get accepted in 2015. 7 steps to a successful MBA application, presented by Linda Abraham. Today we're going to be discussing how you can prepare for your 2015 MBA candidacy before your target schools even release their applications. As usual, we're looking forward to answering all of your questions, and we've set aside some time at the end for questions and answers, so feel free to enter them in the question window and we'll review the questions submitted then. If we didn't have time to get to yours specifically, we'll be providing several options for you to get your answers at the end of the webinar. Now, just a bit about our presenter today. Linda Abraham is the founder and president of Accepted.com. Since 1994, she's advised thousands of applicants to top MBA programs in all the different rounds and has written and lectured extensively in admissions. Linda has been quoted by the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Business Week, among others, and has an MBA from the UCLA's Anderson School of Management. And she's also the proud co-author of the best-selling MBA Admission for Smarties, which some of you will be winning free copies of today. So now, introducing today's webinar, Get Accepted in 2015, 7 Steps to a Successful MBA Application with Linda Abraham.
Thank you very much, Catherine, and thank you to applicants for joining me here today. Before we get started with the webinar, I'd like to learn a little bit about you. So I'm wondering if in the question window you could just briefly put where you're located, the city and state or country where you're located. And again, if you could respond in the question window to that. New York? Great. Welcome, Jeff. Toronto? Mandy? Wonderful. Denver? Anita? Welcome. In Minneapolis, Denver, 2 from Denver, great. Houston, welcome, Chris. Pakistan, woo, what time is it there? I think it's 5 in the morning there. Dedication. Denver, Colorado, thank you. Welcome, Kedar. Somerset, New Jersey, I just got back from New Jersey. I had a new grandchild in New Jersey. 5 a.m. in the morning, that's what I thought. I think Faman is going to win the prize for dedication. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ivanka. Okay, great. Now, let's also, I'm somebody in Southern California. All right, that's where I am. All right, so it's 5 p.m. here, and we have somebody for whom it's 5 a.m. That's great. All right, let's go to the next question I have. And Catherine is going to launch the first poll of the webinar, asking you where you're at in the application process. And if you could just indicate which option best describes you. You're not signing a contract, so don't worry about it. Let's see. I think you see some great pictures of my grandchildren there, but let's see if we can't get the poll up. All right. I guess the poll is up. The options are: how many of you are planning to apply in fall 2014, winter 2015, later, or haven't decided if applying. Can a few more of you vote? We want to get over 50% and preferably over 70%. So again, I really want this to be a participatory webinar. And let's see if we can't get a little higher. Okay, I'm going to count to 5. I'm going to count down from 5 and then we'll close the poll. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, with 61% having voted. And let's share the results. Okay, 45% are planning to apply in fall 2014, round 1, great. 36% in winter 2015, 18% later, and 0% haven't decided. So all of you are planning to apply, you're pretty sure on that. And most of you are planning to apply round 1 or round 2, with plurality applying round 1. Okay, well that's good to know, and that's actually pretty much what I expected. That's wonderful though. Okay, now let's get into the meat of the webinar. What is motivating me to provide this webinar months before the applications even come out? And actually, this is a week when we've been fortunately hearing from happy round 2 applicants accepted at top choice schools, and we're also finishing up or have just finished up with our round 3 applicants. So why now, before the applications are really out, am I presenting on how to apply effectively for 2015? Well, this webinar has grown from 2 seeds: my frustration with applicants who start the process too late and shortchange their chances at the dream schools is the first seed. And the second seed is the amount of limiting and misleading imagery in MBA advising. This is coming from some of my colleagues, sometimes from admissions committee directors, and sometimes from MBA applicants and students themselves. In other words, other MBA applicants. After approximately 20 years in this business, I've seen a lot of metaphors used in describing the MBA admissions process. Some say, notably Stanford's Derek Bolton, that it's an accounting exercise and not a marketing exercise. Others say, usually admissions consultants, it's all about personal branding. And others say it's all about marketing. Well, I believe these metaphors and similes can be useful. I believe that in general metaphors and similes can be useful, but I think they've really been abused in MBA admissions, and they end up obscuring the process. Now, this is a webinar, and I'm using screen sharing software, so I cannot promise you an image-free webinar or a metaphor or free webinar, especially using this technology. This is an acceptance. Let's play farmer and see if we can't cultivate those two seedlings into a flourishing, healthy MBA application. Not bad for someone who just promised you a metaphor free, who just complained about abuse of metaphors in MBA admissions. All right, well, let's go to the first seed. My annual frustration with applicants who come to us at the last minute. Now, I'm an admissions consultant. Obviously, I'm talking about my experience in that role. But it's true whether people are using admissions consultants or not using admissions consultants. If you wait the last minute, you are really limiting. Well, at the last minute, you simply, there's not much you can do to improve your profile. You can only work on the presentation of what you've done in the past. If you come to us, yes, we can polish your essays. We can critique your essays during the week before the essays are due. But we can do so much more if we start early. And you can do so much more in terms of actually changing your qualifications, improving your qualifications, if you look at them now. So don't wait until the last minute. Get started. This webinar is all about using the next few months, starting with April, which starts on Tuesday of next week. You can use the last few days of March. I won't be upset. Using this time to improve your profile and maximize your chances of acceptance at the schools you really, really want to attend. So let me ask you, you all met them again, 45% said they wanted to apply round one. What is the foundation? What is the starting point for your MBA planning and application process? Please answer in the question window, which in our webinars is really the answer window. What should be your starting point? The GMAT? It's important, but I don't think it's really the starting point, Nathan. Shortlisting schools? Research schools and deadline, shortlisting schools. I think these are all later important steps, but later steps. Search for the schools, Fachmed. Anybody else? Kadar, you got it. You should know why you want to do an MBA. Exactly. It's your post-MBA goal. That is the starting point for a successful MBA application. Begin with the end in mind. Your first action point should be honing your goal, clarifying your post-MBA goal, because this is the foundation for your entire MBA application strategy, and I would argue that it can be the foundation for a successful MBA experience. I'm not saying you can't change your goal, you can't modify it, but having an idea, a direction, a sense of where you want to take this marvelous experience is absolutely critical to a successful MBA application and a successful MBA experience. Now, I'm arguing now that having this direction is important for you to make the most of the MBA experience. In addition to that, And for some schools, it's absolutely a requirement. It's as much a requirement as a GMAT, as a GPA, as work experience, as anything else. So for example, Tuck on its website says, it is critical that you enter your MBA program with a firm idea of what you want to do upon graduation. So, again, in the question window, could you please tell me what are some of your post-MBA goals? What do you want to do after with your degree? Why are you here today? Okay, Nathan, you want to go into consulting? Good. Anybody else want to volunteer that information? Marketing and high tech, very good. And if I, JP, if I mispronounce anybody's name, my apologies. Anybody else? Want to go into consulting, move into strategy in my industry, good. Get into management programs at global banks, very good, Mandy. Cross-functional horizon, that's a little general. Okay, move into management in the same industry, okay, general management, okay. All right, these, I like in particular the goals that specify a function and an industry. Okay, that is a good definition for a post-MBA goal. Those two ingredients make for a clear result. And that's in particular for your short-term, immediate post-MBA goal. For some of you, location may be relevant, but if it's not relevant, it's not necessary. For the rest of you, it's very important to define your post-MBA goal in terms of function and industry. Some of you may also be asked for or have a longer-term goal. Some of you mentioned it. Later on, executive management within my current organization was one of the ones I saw. That's fine. Perhaps your longer-term goal also has some kind of greater aspiration or societal good to it. That's fine. If you do have such a element in your long-term goal, be sure to state it. Let the admissions committee know that. Some schools will really want to see that. For some schools, it's less critical from an admissions perspective. But if you have some kind of greater good you're trying to achieve, don't hide it. Now, what if your goal isn't so clear? What are some ways to clarify your goal? Like some of you, somebody wrote that you want a cross-functional horizon. That's a very general kind of goal. Doesn't really tell me what you want to do. So if your goals are unclear, or you know what you want to do but not the industry you want to do it in, or you know the industry you want to work in but not the function you want to perform, how would you go about clarifying it? Again, in the question window, please. Anybody want to take a stab at that one? All right, I'll tell you what I would suggest you do. Talk to MBA students alum. Mandy, exactly. That's great. The first thing I would do is examine what you enjoy and dislike about the work you're doing now. Obviously, and this is, I wouldn't limit it, by the way, to professional work. When I talk about work, you could also consider volunteer activities and commitment. When you look towards your future, you obviously want more of what you like and less of what you dislike. This is fairly elementary. Now, Mandy mentioned talk to MBA students and alumni. Talk to people. I would also add talk to people in positions that you find attractive or that you think you might find attractive in the future. What do they actually do? And ask them, what do they do? How do they spend their time? What education do they believe was useful to them? Do they wish they would have had taken some different classes or gone a different degree? From what programs they want to hire people for the positions you find appealing? Any of these would be good questions to ask in an informational interview. Now, once you have a clearly defined goal, post-MBA to short-term goal in terms of function and industry, and yes, you can change one or both, so changing both via the MBA is much more difficult, it will be a substantive and meaningful guide to you in the process of choosing schools. How do you know what schools to go to if you don't know what you want to do afterwards? Because schools have different strengths. Once you know what you want, direction you want to take, it will help you in choosing schools. And as I mentioned earlier, in many schools, a clearly defined, realistic post-MBA goal is as much a requirement of admission as a competitive GMAT or quality work experience. I showed you before the Tuck quote. Believe me, there are others on other school websites. I was recently at a Forte event, and USC Marshall representative was there and spoke about it. I've been at many, many other events. I've moderated other events, and it comes up again and again and again. It's not at all programs, but it is at the vast majority. They want to see direction. Now, we've talked about what you want to get out of the school. There's another very, very important element, and that's going to be what the schools want from you, your qualifications. What qualifications do they want you to have? So if step one is about what you want, action item number two is about what you bring to the table, what you can do. In the question window, again, I'm going to ask you, what are some of the different elements that will make up your qualifications? What are some of the things that you are going to have to show the schools to show that you are qualified? If you could respond in the question window. Educational qualities, leadership experience, very good. Amir Hussein was very good. International exposure, good. GMAT, absolutely. Teamwork, good. Good. Anybody else? These are all good. These are all right. Experience, yes. Yes. Critical thinking, yes. Correct. Okay. Action item number two is evaluate your qualifications. Oops, excuse me, I've talked to people. There you have analytical skills, previous experience in specific fields. Right, you're great. Thank you very much. So action item number two is evaluate your qualifications. And by the way, two and three are very closely related. Some would put three first and then two, but just know that. There are four basic areas you're going to want to examine in evaluating your qualifications. The first one is academics, and many of you indicated that in response to my question. This is really a pillar of your application. Show that you can, that you can and will do the work in class. Your grades and test scores are the most common way to show academic ability, but they're not the exclusive way, and we'll get to that in a little bit. I think it'll be action item number four. Work experience is also critical. Now, let me ask you, what is more important? And this will be a second poll, so it's going to be on your screen in a minute. What is more important? Quantity of work experience, quality of work experience, or both are important? If you could answer, take a few seconds to run this poll. And, okay. We're up to, good, almost at 70%. Anybody else want to vote here? Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We're going to close the poll with 77% having voted and then share the results. So 47% quality, 53% said both are important. I would be with those who said both are important, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Because both quantity and quality count. If I had to choose which is more important, I would probably choose quality. So you are a very savvy MBA applicant crowd here today. Thank you. The sweet spot in terms of quantity, and that's the easier thing to point to, is 3 to 6 years. I would say 2 to 8 on the outside. Now, in terms of quality, which is a little bit harder to define, put your finger on, quality work experience will show increased responsibility, growth on the job, and that you've made an impact, that you've made a difference. Demonstrated managerial ability is also an element in quality work experience. Another quality that will make your work experience look better or more attractive is international and or multicultural experience. So the first pillar of your application are academics, intellectual, evidence of intellectual ability. The second one is your work experience. The third pillar of your MBA application in terms of evaluating your qualifications are your personal qualities. And the most important one, as many of you alluded to in response to my question, is leadership. Leadership, leadership, leadership is key at any top MBA program. Teamwork, organizational skills, analytical and communication skills are also important, but in general they are secondary to leadership. And actually, they are probably subsumed under the title of leadership. But the schools will want to see all of it. The bottom line is they want to see that the people they admit are contributors, that they're givers. Again, they are people of impact, people who make a difference, whose presence make a difference. The final element, the fourth pillar, is fit. Fit with the culture and values of a particular school. So a school that emphasizes case analysis, like Harvard or Darden, will want people in their class who are going to share information, be quick on their feet, and also be very articulate. Some schools will emphasize more collaboration and teamwork a little bit. You know, team Fuqua, for one. Can any of these elements be, if you look at this list and you look at these four pillars and you think that one's a little bit shaky, maybe has a few cracks in it or could be crumbling, then yes, they can be improved and they can be mitigated. Why? Because you are here today and you are starting early. You need to look at action item number three, which is research the schools. And researching the school comes now because once you have your goal, you can look at the schools that support your goal. And you can also look at the schools, since you now have evaluated your qualifications, where you're going to be competitive. So the first thing you have to examine, however, is what schools are best suited to help you achieve your goals. Don't ignore your qualifications, but this is kind of the starting point. Where do you want to end up, and which schools are going to take you there? What should you examine as you explore school websites or talk to alumni or review information on the web? I would look first at recruiting and placement. Again, you have a direction you want to go in. Have graduates of this program gone in that direction? And then what about educational preferences? Do you want a case study school with a rigid curriculum for the first year, which is what Harvard has? Do you want a more flexible curriculum, as Chicago Booth has? Do you want a very project-oriented program like NYU Stern or Michigan Ross or Haas? Or do you want a mix of pedagogical approaches, mix of lecture, small group, seminar, case, depending upon the topic of instruction, the topic being discussed? And finally, so that would be the second thing to look at. The third element you're going to look at in evaluating the programs and researching the schools is extracurricular activities and opportunities. And here you, again, there are really two aspects of that element. One, what's going to help you get the job you want? If you're interested in not-for-profit, is there an active net impact chapter on campus? If you're interested in consulting, is there a strong consulting club with lots of case competitions? If you're interested in entrepreneurship, is there a business plan competition? Is there a lot of an entrepreneurial ecosystem on campus? Yeah, are there events that you're going to want to get involved in and perhaps take leadership roles in? That's kind of the professional part of the extracurricular and activities and opportunities element in researching schools. There's also, however, something that just deals with personal preferences. If you like certain sports, are there clubs that have those sports on this campus? If your identity either as a particular being of a particular political persuasion, ethnic group, religious group, whatever is important to you, are there groups like that on campus in the part as part of the business school? Are there activities, affinity? If you like wine tasting, is there a wine tasting club on campus? Those kinds of things that will just increase your enjoyment of your time in business school and, again, help you develop a network of like-minded people. And where should you, and then there's, of course, it's just personal preferences. Do you want a warm climate, or do you love snow sports? Do you want a small, intimate campus, or do you want to be on a large campus in an urban area? Do you have a significant other whose needs need to be considered? Do you want to be close to family, or not so close to family? Your personal preferences are the fourth element that you should examine as you research the schools. Now, where should you look for information? Where would you start? I personally would start with specialty rankings or websites that will rank schools or have done research, like PitchBook, for example, in terms of their strength in entrepreneurship, venture capital entrepreneurship, or VC and private equity. That's PitchBook. There are other sites for other fields. I'd also look at the employment reports on the school's websites. That's a fantastic source of information in terms of letting you know that, yes, this school supports your goals because it's helped other people get jobs in the function and the industry and perhaps the companies you really want to go and work for. Obviously, you need to comb the school's website. You want to know, are there active clubs on campus? Not just listed, but are they active? Is the curriculum one providing you with classes that you're going to want to take? If you find it boring and not appealing, then I don't think you want to go there. And are there blogs can you talk to current students and recent alumni? Several of you mentioned that earlier. How do you find out if clubs are active? JP asked in the question window. That's an excellent question. The best way is most clubs will be linked to, and then you can see, is there a current president? Are there activities? And, of course, again, you can talk to people on campus. And you can ask to be put in touch, the admissions committee, the admissions officer put you in touch with members of a particular club that you're interested in. Obviously, there are MBA tours and school-sponsored events. And finally, there are school visits. Now, you have a real cost-return spectrum here. Local MBA tour events and school-sponsored events are good. They're usually much less expensive than visits to schools. They are still valuable, but they're not as valuable as an actual visit. So you just have to weigh that up and see if you can afford both the time and the money cost of a school visit, depending upon how interested you are in the program. So when you examine the programs, you're going to see those that best support your goals, where you think you're going to be happiest. But is that all that goes into choosing a school? Of course not. So I'm going to ask you, what does this slide represent? In the question window, please. What does that slide represent to you? Anybody want to hazard a guess? A Venn diagram. It's a Venn diagram, yeah. What does it represent? Schools fit, no? Sorry. Mismatch, exactly, Nathan. Exactly. It represents rejection. When the schools you want to attend don't overlap or intersect with the schools likely to want you, you are probably going to get rejected. However, if there is overlap, there is intersection between the universe of the schools you want to attend and the schools likely to want you, in other words, the schools where you are competitive, then your chances of acceptance soar. It's just that simple. So, this slide represents an effective application strategy. This slide represents a strategy that would lead towards rejection. And that's why you have to balance both what you want and what the schools are looking for. Now, if you look at your qualifications and the schools you want to attend and you're on this slide, something has to change. Either you need to choose other schools, or you need to improve your qualifications. And the latter is action item number 4. So once you've evaluated your qualifications and you've chosen the schools you want to apply to, some of you may say, hey, I'm pretty competitive, I don't have much to do. But many of you will find yourself like this, and then you have to either change your schools or improve your qualifications. So action item number 4 is about improving areas that need improving. Let's take a look at some of the areas that are most commonly come up as need improvement. First one is your grades. Now, obviously, you can't go back and retake your undergraduate coursework and change your GPA. You can, however, take business-related classes like statistics for business, accounting, maybe calculus. If your English isn't that good or your verbal score is low, then you can take business communications or English for business and courses like that and earn A's in them. And this is particularly important if you have a problematic GPA, especially if your GPA is showing weakness in a particular area. You can also consider certificates like the CFA, if it's relevant for your goals, or certificates in project management, and just showing that you can apply yourself and finish this program will show that whatever affected and hampered your academic efforts in college either no longer exists or that you've learned how to deal with whatever it was. I would also encourage you in your application, again, if your grades had a few weeks, semesters, to provide context to the admissions committee as to what was going on, either immaturity your freshman year, illness in your family, your own illness, some kind of crisis, that, again, as long as it's no longer affecting your ability to excel, your performance, the admissions committees would want to know about it and know that you've gotten over it or gone beyond it. Now, what if your quant skills are weak? What if you are the proverbial poet or you haven't taken a math class since high school, but your grades are good? Then I would consider something like MBAMath.com or a financial modeling class, anything that you can say to the schools, look, I'm working to prepare myself for business school. However, one of the more common concerns is the good old GMAT, the good old scary GMAT. The best way to handle a low GMAT is to retake it and raise it. And that's not going to make you very happy, especially if you've already taken it a couple of times. But if you've only taken it once and you think that you are capable of a higher GMAT score, then really I would encourage you to prepare again and retake it. If you haven't taken it, don't take it on a lark. If you're not sure if you should retake or if you've taken the GMAT three or more times, please go to our website and just do a site search for should you retake the GMAT. I did a video, a short video, on exactly that topic. Actually, it's a post, there's a video, you can, you know, either one will work. Now, I'm just making a note here. Okay, work experience, another element that sometimes people feel is not where it should be. What if you have too little work experience? You have less than 2 years. Well, there's one easy way to take care of that, and that is work for another year, and then you will have one more year of work experience and you will be probably more competitive. But if you don't want to do that, aim for schools with lower average ages and matriculation. Also, be prepared to show that in the one or two or whatever years that you've been working since undergraduate, and perhaps because of work experience you had during your undergraduate years, you are more advanced in your career than most people at your level of experience. Basically, you want to show that you've done in this 1 or 2 years what others have taken much more to do. Schools seem to be turning away from admitting and matriculating MBA students straight from college or with less than 2 years of experience. You may also want to consider an MS in management program, such as that offered by Duke or London Business School, and I believe Ross is also starting one. What, on the other hand, if you have too much work experience? You have maybe more than 8 years, then I would suggest aim for programs with higher ages of matriculation if you're in the 6 to 8 year range of work experience. If you're much beyond that, you may want to consider the Sloan Fellows program, which is a full-time 1 year program. You can also look into Stanford's MSX program, which is for experienced leaders. You may also want to consider EMBA programs or programs like the TRIUM program. If you want to go for the full-time MBA, then be extra clear about why you need an MBA now at your level. You know, you have a particular goal, you've developed it now, you need it. When combined with your previous experience or previous education, it will help you achieve your goal. And if you can, show that you are not relying on the school's Career Placement Center or Career Management Center to find you your post-MBA job. You have the context, try and make the argument that you have the contacts, or perhaps a job offer awaiting you after your MBA, because the schools know that their career management centers are very much geared towards people with, you know, 3 to 8 years of work experience getting an MBA. That's what they're geared towards. And the last thing they want is to have somebody finishing their program and unable to get a job or struggling to get a job. And again, I mentioned that an international component is something very much admired in terms of work experience. You can still try and get international exposure, either an international assignment overseas for a few months, or at least placement on a team where you're going to be working perhaps with people abroad, or if you're in a large corporation, maybe other members of the company staff that are stationed abroad. And then there's also personal travel that you might be able to do this summer, anything outside your home country. Personal qualities. Okay, what if you really haven't been able to show much leadership on the job? Because it can be hard for people in their early and mid-20s to show that they're leaders, or you're in a very flat organization. Well, if you can assume responsibility, that's great. You can still do so. Again, there's a good 6 to 8 months before, or 6 months at this point, before the round one deadlines, and there's 9 months before the round two deadlines. But if that's not possible to do, realize that you can, community service may allow you opportunities for leadership that are much harder to acquire on the job because it's volunteer. You don't have the kind of rigid hierarchies typically in volunteer settings that you have in larger corporations. And it would also allow you to show the schools that you are a contributor. If they see that you've contributed to your community before you start their program, then they're going to have greater confidence that you're going to be a contributor when you end up on campus. So, whether you choose to get involved in a fairly large organization like some of those listed on the screen now, or you start your own thing, or you do something with a small local organization or a religious, church, local school, whatever, it doesn't really matter so much as long as you assume responsibility, you make a commitment, and again, you make a difference. Some of you may be worrying, well, isn't it kind of late for me to start something? I would argue better late than never. And again, you still have several months in which to make a difference. And not only that, realize that while it could be short in terms of a round one application, a short track record, you could find yourself applying to some programs round two. You could find yourself being waitlisted. And then suddenly this very short community service commitment will not be so short anymore. And you could have really had an impact or managed an event or something. And there is also the possibility, we don't like to think about it, but that you are not accepted this year and then you reapply and suddenly what started out as a 3-month commitment is a year or 15-month commitment, and then you really have a track record. So don't say it's too late. It's not too late. If you have made a community service commitment and you've been doing it for a while, don't feel that you have to suddenly drop it in order to do something else, or that you have to have 10 different commitments. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about one serious commitment where you assume some responsibility, you take a leadership role, and you make a difference. So we've talked about a lot of different things, retaking the GMATs, taking classes, assuming more leadership and responsibility, getting international exposure, volunteering, going for relevant certification, making a community service commitment. I hope that nobody thinks that I expect you to do all those things. I definitely don't. But if you do find yourself thinking that you have a lot of these steps to take, it might be wise to wait till round two or till 2016. Until now, I've been talking more about strategy, not really about the application. There are a few things, I'd like to shift gears now, there are a few things that you can do now which will be much more concretely contributing to your actual application. And those are the last three to-dos, the last three action items in today's webinar. The first one is just a little bit of prep for your essays. I'm not talking about drafting essays. I really would discourage you from drafting essays until the applications come out. The last few years have been a period of tremendous flux and change in the MBA application, and you could very well end up drafting essays that are useless and a waste of time. So what I would suggest now is that you simply create a file, either a physical paper, old-fashioned paper file, or a computer file, which is probably what most of you would do, and jot down ideas for topics to include in your essays. Notes from informational interviews, perhaps thoughts or observations about schools that you researched or visited, and maybe even possible essay topics. Now, what would be something that you might want to record in terms of essay topics? Well, what experiences are you most proud of? What would you like the schools to know about? Indeed, a few of the schools asked the simple question, given what's in what we've asked, what you've put in your application, what else do you want us to know about you? Harvard, for example, and I think Chicago also asked something very similar. Make a few notes about these experiences. What was the challenge you faced? What did you actually do? What was the impact of your actions? And what character traits did you reveal through these actions and through this experience? Once the applications are out, you can start working on the essays. If you are so inclined now to take notes, then I would do just that. I would take some notes. I wouldn't check it for grammar. I wouldn't edit it. I wouldn't do anything more than that. I would nail other stuff at this point in time. Start working on the essays in July or August, or at least when the actual questions come out. Harvard usually releases its questions or gives you some access to its application actually in May, and then June and July are when most of the applications will come out. And this is obviously for round one deadlines. If you're aiming for round two, there's no need to start until probably November. October, November. Action item number 6, work on your resume. This is something you can really nail now. There's a possibility there will be an achievement in the next few months that you want to add to your resume, fine. And then you might have to remove an older bullet point. Again, that is fine. Try and keep it to one page. Some schools will allow you to go on to two pages. Some schools insist on one-page resumes only. To keep it to one page and to make every bullet point and letter count, focus on achievements and accomplishment, not just descriptions of responsibilities. And for heaven's sakes, please, 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 don't use bullet points to repeat what your job title implies. If you are a financial analyst, you don't have to say that you create financial models or you do financial analysis. If you are a consultant, don't just say, I consulted with clients. That's obvious. You could say that you built a financial model that predicted a certain outcome that contributed X percent of revenue to the company's bottom line, or encouraged the company to enter a certain market and, you know, 10% of the revenue is now coming from that market. You could say that you consulted, that you led a team in consulting with a company on whether to enter a certain market or not, and determined that yes, it was a great idea, no, it wasn't a great idea, or implementation, or whatever it is. But just to say you consulted with clients doesn't say a word. It's a waste. And second, all right, and the last item, last action item for you before the application comes out, are talking to your recommenders. Decide on and ask your recommenders. You want to ask recommenders who were willing to write an enthusiastic letter of support for you. Tell them you will give them material they can use, and also about 4 weeks notice, give them a sense of the time frame that you're going to, you know, you're going to want this in late August, early September, and make sure that they're going to be around then, not on vacation. And this is something, again, that you can line up ahead of time with notice and just be ready for when the applications come out. Now, I'm going to review the 7 action items and then open the floor for questions. But first, if you would like to win a free copy of my book, MBA Admission for Smarties, no, you don't have to post anything on Facebook now, MBA Admission for Smarties, No Nonsense Guide to Acceptance at Top Business Schools, listen up. The first 3 people who can provide the answer to my next question will get a copy of MBA Admission for Smarties free. In the question window, please post the answer to the following question. What is the first and foundational item of the seven action items? First three people, why MBA? Nathan, you got it. Catherine, I hope you make a note. Amy and Ivanka, you were the first three. No, Nathan, Amy, and Samarth. Ivanka will send you also, okay? And actually, Samarth, you said GMAT. That was not a foundational item. So it's going to be Nathan, Amy, and Ivanka. And most of you are responding, knowing why you want an MBA. Great. Wonderful. Wonderful. You guys got it. Thank you. Okay, that's wonderful. So the seven action items are, and there's MBA Mission for Smarties, hone your goal, evaluate your qualifications, research the schools. If there's a mismatch between your qualifications and what the schools want, then you have to improve those areas that need improving. If you have time now, you can do a little bit of essay prep, but I definitely discourage, you're very welcome, Ivanka. I definitely discourage drafting essays at this point. Work on your resume. There is something that you can polish off and decide on and ask your recommenders. Here's the whole list. Some of you will look at this list and wisely decide to apply round two or even wait until next year. We discussed that briefly a minute ago. Others will only have a few action items to do because you've already started on many of these tasks, or you're simply very well qualified, and that's fantastic. Congratulations. But you all should have something you can do, and whatever you do now will improve your chances of acceptance round one or round two of next year. And right now, I'd like to ask you to write down, not in the question window, this is for you folks, write down at least one action item you're going to start on this week based on today's webinar and set yourself a deadline for completion. Again, you don't have to put this in the question window. You can put it on a piece of paper, back of a napkin. All right, great, Fahim, great. Back of a napkin or a digital file, whatever you want, your phone, I don't care. But write down something that you're taking away from this webinar and you're going to actually do that will improve your chances of acceptance next year. Now, as you know, Accepted, I'm the president of Accepted, and Accepted is an admissions consultancy. We'd love to help you. I mentioned that we sometimes get frustrated when applicants come to us late in the process. We'll still help you to the best of our ability, but there's so much we can do now. We bring enormous MBA admissions experience and an eagle eye for editing to your application. I personally have been in this field for 20 years. There are people on my staff who've been on either almost as long or longer. Former admissions directors, published authors, one of our MBA admissions consultants is actually a contributing columnist for the Wall Street Journal. We can guide you. Do you need to do some of the steps that I suggested? When should you do them? What schools are appropriate? And then, of course, how to best present yourself via your application. As a thank you for attending today's webinar, even if you don't choose to work with us, I also want to offer you a discount on MBA Admission for Smarties through March 31st. That's Monday. If you go to mbaadmissionsforsmarties.com, you can purchase it there, either the paperback version or the Kindle version. Now, we're only offering the discount for the paperback in the United States, but I think most of you are in the United States at the moment. And again, the discount code, the coupon code is MBA50. So jot down the code, head on over after the questions and answer session to mbaadmissionforsmarties.com/order, and you can grab that. We also have a few freebies for you, and we have tons of freebies for you, actually, at the first URL on the screen, and we will be sending these URLs out to you after the webinar is over. www.accept.com/mba/application.aspx. And finally, I would really encourage you to explore our services, specifically MBA Admissions Consulting. If you have questions, you're not sure what to do, you're not sure what schools to apply to, an hour of consulting can really go a long way. So with that, I'd like to take your questions. Now, Catherine, I had flagged, and I think you've also flagged a few questions. And you can pose other questions. So let's see. Okay, Samarth asked, how important is a campus visit as part of an MBA application to a school? The biggest value, and this is particularly true of big city schools, of a campus visit is that it gives you insight into the program and it will help you answer the why this school question if it's posed either in the essay or in a short answer question on the application or in an interview, and you're almost guaranteed to be asked that question somewhere. That is the main value. Now, for some of the smaller schools, I think they take, or some of the schools that are not in major cities, I think they take a visit as a sign of serious interest. And I think that's, I don't know if that's formally weighed, but it's certainly looked on favorably. If you go up to, you know, Hanover to visit Tuck, if you go to Charlottesville to visit Darden, they're weighing that. I don't think it's quite as impressive to Columbia if you visit or to NYU Stern because it's relatively easy to get to New York. On the other hand, if you're in New York City and you never visit those programs and then you apply, that might look a little odd to the school. So let's see, are there any other questions? That Catherine, did you see anything that you want to, I flagged a couple. Now, Fachman asked about why not have a shift to a different function. Currently I'm in supply chain, would like to shift to finance after 2 to 3 years. You definitely can shift function in. So if you're in supply chain, role, say in investment banking, you can be an investment banker and focus on companies with a lot of supply chain elements like transportation, FedEx, UPS, and now then your past experience is going to be very, very valuable. So there's no reason, I did not mean to imply in any way, shape, or form that you can't use the MBA to shift, to go into a different function. Indeed, I would say that the overwhelming majority of MBA applicants are switching either function or industry, and some are attempting both. Let's see, any other questions? Let's see, I had one here that I also marked. This is from JP. The further away one is from graduation, do grads matter less and the GMAT matters more? I think there is some truth to that. Especially if you bombed your freshman year, which is not unusual, and your grades later were good, then you have a strong GMAT and a good record of progression at work, then the freshman year will not be looked at too seriously or too closely. If you had a downward trend in your grades, then you probably need to address it in an optional essay or additional information section or something like that. Let's see what else we have here.
A couple more recent questions now at the end as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ivanka asks, do executive and part-time MBA programs generally expect lower GMAT scores? Yes. Yes, I don't know that they expect it so much, but they certainly get them. And they admit people, they tend to admit people with lower GMAT scores. So thank you for that question. Thank you for all your questions. You've been a marvelous audience. Let's see, what else we have here?
There's a few more.
Okay, I was just looking at one from Nathan. And let me respond to that. Assuming perfect essays, very solid work experience with promotions, strong extracurriculars, but a 2.7 GPA and 780 GMAT, have I phased myself out of schools like Harvard, Stanford? Can I assume that such a low GPA is an automatic barrier even with extenuating circumstances? No, do not assume that. Obviously, there's more to it than this basic profile that you've provided, but if everything else is solid and there were extenuating circumstances, then your 2.7, it's not going to help you get in, but it's definitely not an automatic ding. And I would encourage you to, again, you can talk to us and get a more in-depth analysis, but it's definitely not an automatic ding. Samarth, can it go against international students if they don't visit a school? No. I think it would. What you should make sure you do, though, is visit the tours and the receptions that the schools will hold in your country, in your location, so that they understand that it's very expensive and very time-consuming to travel abroad. So don't worry about that. What is a weak GPA? How do schools use GPA? GPA is evidence that you know how to apply yourself in an academic setting. And a weak GPA, in my opinion, this is a guideline. It's not an ironclad rule. Okay, this is not gospel. There is a GPA that's more than 0.3 below the school's average GPA. Let's see. Okay, Mandy asks, is a GMAT of 700 or more critical to getting into the top 10? I have a 680 and have taken the GMAT 3 times. My friend who also had a 680 got dinged by CBS, which told her they only look at apps with 700 or more GMAT. I got dinged myself at Kellogg this week. Well, I'm sorry that was your experience. I don't know who told you that Columbia only looks at GMATs with 700. I know they don't. I've spoken to the director of admissions, and I think she'd be very disappointed to read that you were told this by somebody in some position of authority there. However, what you do need to realize is that there are management consulting firms and investment banks that will only basically use the GMAT as a screening tool. And if you say you want to work at, you know, an elite consulting firm or investment bank, and you have a 680, then you're not being realistic. And the schools may, on that basis, say that your 680 is just not good enough, and you know they may not admit you on that basis. Also, if your quant score was lower than your was significantly below, let's say 70%, 70th percentile, or actually if either one were below the 70th percentile, I think that would be a red flag. And if your GMAT was combined with a low GPA, again, I think that would be really, really hurting you. So I'd be delighted to discuss it with you more. And I think it would really pay, since you do have an application already. We also have reapplication evaluations, aka DING analyses. And before you move forward, you really need to know what went wrong. All right, JP asked, should we always use the optional essay? Well, I believe that if you have nothing to say, you should say nothing. But in most cases, and for most people, most of the time, you will have something to write for the optional essay. It depends on the instructions, the question posed for the optional essay, as well as what you have to say. So since I don't like to say always or never in admissions, I won't say you should always use the optional essay, but most of the time, most people should use the optional essay. How's that? Does it do the job? You're very welcome. All of you, you're very welcome. Okay, let's see what else we have here, and I think we're almost out of time.
I think we're almost out of questions as well.
All right, good. I mean, I'll take Chris's question. For someone who studied finance in undergrad and has a GPA of 3.4, how I can improve that part of my profile? Would the CFA be a good alternative since I have taken almost most undergrad business courses? Well, first of all, 3.4 is not a low GPA in my book. I don't know which programs you're aiming for, Chris, if you want to add that in the question window. And also your GMAT. You didn't provide a GMAT. A high GMAT, certainly when, you know 720 plus or something, would go a long way towards, 3.4 GPA is just a little lower than the average at the top schools, which is around 3.6, 3.7, so you'd be in that 0.3. And if you combined it with a high GMAT, then you'd be in really good shape. So let's see, did Chris provide that information? Tuck is your target. You're very welcome, Nathan. I guess you don't have, I'm guessing that you don't have your GMAT yet. If you combine that GPA with a nice high GMAT, I think you'll be in good shape at Tuck. CFA certainly would help, especially if it's tied to your goals and would be useful to you professionally. And I know at Toronto Rotman, they will actually waive the GMAT if you are, if you have a CFA. Okay, I think we want to take one more question, Catherine, or should we call it an evening? You guys getting tired?
One more here. Flagged it.
You're very welcome, Chris.
Okay, well, maybe we should wrap it up.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Linda, for this great webinar, and thank you, everyone, for attending. As you leave, please take a moment to complete our short survey. We value your feedback. You can review this webinar early next week online. We will send out an email letting you know when it's available. Also, check your inboxes in about an hour for a list of resources and links that Linda mentioned during this webinar. Thank you again, and best of luck with your MBA application.
Yes, thank you from me, too, and thanks also for your wonderful participation, your questions, your answers, all the above. And good luck with your applications. If we can help you with your application, we'd be delighted to do so.